Welcome to the Nowracast Tech Briefing. I spent the entire weekend trying to organize my digital life, and I realized I have about 4 different note-taking apps that I actively use, and none of them talk to each other.
Only 4? You're showing remarkable restraint. I think I'm up to 7 if you count the random text files scattered across my desktop.
It's a disaster. I was actually looking into writing a script to sync them all, but then I realized I'd just be creating a 5th system that I would inevitably abandon.
The classic XKCD problem. You think you're unifying standards, but you just create another one.
Exactly. Well, speaking of systems not talking to each other, we have a packed show today. We're going to dive into DeepSeek's new coding agent, Reasonix, and how it's leveraging prompt caching to drive down costs.
We'll also be looking at the shifting landscape of search engines. With Google heavily leaning into AI overviews, a lot of people are looking for alternatives, and we've got a rundown of what's out there.
And finally, we'll dig into a fascinating architectural bug in Claude Code involving model context protocol servers and concurrency. If you're building local AI agents, this is a headache you'll want to know about. Let's get into it. All right, let's start with DeepSeek. They've been on an absolute tear lately, and now there's a new project making waves called DeepSeek Reasonix. This is positioned as a native coding agent with a major focus on high caching and low cost.
Yeah, this is really interesting. We've seen a lot of coding agents pop up recently, things like Devin, Aider, and Anthropic's own Claude Code. But DeepSeek Reasonix is taking a slightly different approach, specifically optimizing for developers who are extremely conscious of API costs.
Right. When you're using an AI coding agent, the traditional workflow involves sending a massive amount of context with every single request. You're sending the current file, maybe several related files, the error logs, and the agent's previous steps. If you're paying per token, that adds up incredibly fast, especially if you're running a loop where the agent tries something, fails, reads the error, and tries again.
Exactly. And what Reasonix does is heavily leverages DeepSeek's native prompt caching capabilities. By keeping the repository context warm on the server side, it only pays for the newly generated tokens and a tiny fraction of the cached input tokens. The cost reduction is staggering when you compare it to a naive implementation that just blasts the whole context window every time.
I was looking at some of the benchmarks they posted on the GitHub page. The caching hit rate is consistently above 90% for sustained coding sessions. That completely changes the calculus of using an agent. Instead of worrying that a rogue debugging loop is going to cost you $10 in an hour, you're looking at pennies.
And that financial peace of mind actually changes how you use the tool. When the cost is negligible, you're much more willing to let the agent explore dead ends or refactor large chunks of code speculatively. It lowers the barrier to entry for solo developers and hobbyists who might have been priced out of using something like Claude 3.5 Sonnet for continuous agentic tasks.
But we have to talk about the performance, right? Because cost is only one side of the equation. If it's cheap, but it hallucinates constantly, it's not actually saving you time. DeepSeek's base models, particularly DeepSeek Coder V2 and V3, have proven to be incredibly capable, punching way above their weight class.
They really have. And Reasonix seems to be built on top of that strong foundation. It uses a reasoning-first approach, hence the name, where it explicitly outlines its plan before it starts modifying files. It's very similar to the chain of thought prompting we see in other advanced models, but it's baked into the agent's default behavior.
I also found it interesting how they handle tool integration. It's a native agent, meaning it has direct access to the shell and the file system, much like Aider, but it feels a bit more opinionated about how it manages state and history to maximize that cache hit rate. It structures its prompts in a way that keeps the immutable context, like the core repository structure, at the top, and only appends the highly variable state at the bottom.
That's the secret sauce of effective prompt caching. If you modify something at the beginning of the prompt, you invalidate the entire cache downstream. By appending the mutable state, Reasonix ensures that the bulk of the context remains cached across turns. It's a really elegant software engineering solution to an AI infrastructure problem.
What I find fascinating is the timing of this release. Anthropic just launched Claude Code, which is a fantastic tool, but it is explicitly tied to the Anthropic ecosystem and their pricing tiers. Reasonix feels like an open ecosystem counterpunch. It's saying, you don't need to be locked into a premium API to get agentic workflows.
I think long-term, these clever caching strategies will win out. The models will inevitably commoditize, but the scaffolding, how you manage context, how you handle terminal output, how you parse complex project structures, that's where the real value is going to be generated for developers. Rezonix is a great step in that direction. Moving on, there's a great piece over on TechCrunch this week titled Search Engines Alternatives Now That Google Isn't Google Anymore. And that title really hits the nail on the head, doesn't it?
It really does. I think a lot of us have fought this shift over the past year or two. Google used to be this incredibly reliable index of the web. You typed in a query, you got 10 blue links, and you found what you needed. It was utilitarian, fast, and relatively transparent.
Now, it feels like you have to scroll past sponsored products, a massive AI overview that might or might not be hallucinating, a People Also Ask widget, and 3 YouTube videos before you even see an organic text result. The core product has fundamentally changed from an information retrieval system to an engagement platform.
Exactly. The TechCrunch article highlights 6 alternatives for users who are feeling that friction. And what's interesting is that these alternatives fall into a couple of very distinct categories. You have the AI-first upstarts, like Perplexity, and then you have the traditional, privacy-focused indexes, like DuckDuckGo and Brave Search.
Let's talk about Perplexity first, because that seems to be the one grabbing the most mindshare right now. Perplexity isn't really a search engine in the traditional sense. It's an answer engine. It takes your query, runs a search in the background, reads the top results, and synthesizes an answer with inline citations.
Right. And for certain types of queries, like what is the difference between a Roth and traditional IRA, it's fantastic. You don't want to read 3 different SEO-optimized blog posts. You just want the facts. But for other queries, like trying to find a specific local business's website or a niche forum discussion, that synthesis layer actually gets in the way.
Which brings us to the other end of the spectrum. Kaji. Kaji is fascinating because it's a paid search engine. You actually pay a monthly subscription fee, starting around $5, to search the web without ads and without tracking.
It's a bold business model, but it completely aligns the incentives. If you are the customer, the search engine is designed to serve you the best possible results, not to keep you on the page to show you more ads. Kaji lets you heavily customize your results, too. You can downrank domains like Pinterest or boost independent blogs. It's search for power users. I've been using Kaji for a few months, and the ability to basically ban certain SEO spam sites from my results has been life-changing. But the big question the article raises is whether any of these alternatives can actually make a dent in Google's market share. Google is the default on the iPhone. It's the default in Chrome. That inertia is incredibly hard to overcome.
Inertia is the most powerful force in tech. Most people will never change their default search engine. But I do think we're seeing a fracturing of use cases. People might still use Google for navigating to known sites, but they might open Perplexity when they have a complex research question, or use a specialized tool for coding queries.
The article also mentions Brave Search, which is notable because they are actually building their own independent web index from scratch, rather than just repackaging Bing or Google's results like DuckDuckGo historically did. That's a massive technical undertaking.
It is, and it's vital for the health of the web. If all the alternative search engines are just different front ends for the Bing API, we don't actually have search diversity. Brave is investing heavily in crawling the web themselves, and their results are surprisingly good.
So, if you're feeling the Google fatigue, it might be time to test the waters. The web is vast, and there are finally some viable, high-quality lenses to view it through that aren't optimized purely for ad revenue. For our last deep dive, we're heading over to the Anthropic GitHub repository. There's a fascinating issue filed under Claude Code this week. MCP servers disconnect in one session when another session connects to the same MCP server.
This is a classic concurrency problem, but it's happening in the relatively new world of the Model Context Protocol, or MCP. For those who might not be familiar, MCP is essentially a standardized way for AI models to connect to external tools and data sources locally. It's the glue that lets an AI agent actually do things on your machine.
Right. So if you want your local Claude code agent to be able to read your Notion workspace or query a local PostgreSQL database, you spin up an MCP server for that specific tool. The issue here is what happens when you have multiple instances of Claude code trying to talk to that exact same MCP server simultaneously.
According to the bug report, if you open Claude code session A and connect it to, let's say, a Notion MCP server using your local config file, everything works fine. You can search, create pages, do whatever you need. But the moment you open session B in a separate terminal and it connects to that same MCP server, session A silently disconnects.
And that silent failure is the worst part. The tools that were working perfectly in session A suddenly start throwing no such tool available errors. And if you run the /MCP command, it just shows the server is disconnected. There's no warning, no error message saying connection preempted by another client. It just drops.
It highlights a really interesting architectural debate in how we build these local AI toolchains. Should an MCP server act like a robust, multi-tenant daemon that can handle multiplexed connections from dozens of clients? Or is it designed to be a lightweight one-to-one process that gets spawned specifically for a single session?
Right now, it seems like the implementation is leaning towards the latter, but the user expectation is the former. As developers, we're used to background services, like a database daemon or a Docker engine, handling multiple concurrent connections effortlessly. We expect the MCP server to act like a utility, not an exclusive lock.
Exactly. The problem likely stems from how the standard input and standard output streams are being handled. Many of these local MCP servers communicate over standard I/O rather than HTTP or WebSockets. If you have two different terminal sessions trying to pipe data into the same standard I/O stream of a single background process, you're going to get race conditions, or one session will just hijack the pipe entirely.
Which is exactly what seems to be happening here. Session B hijacks the pipe, and session A is left talking to a void. The fix probably requires a shift in how Claude Code manages these server life cycles. It might need to act as a local broker or multiplexer, maintaining a single connection to the MCP server and then routing the requests from the various CLI sessions internally.
Or alternatively, it needs to spawn a completely separate instance of the MCP server for every session, assuming the underlying tool, like the Notion API, can handle the duplicate authentication and rate limits. But that uses more system memory and could cause its own set of conflicts if the server requires exclusive access to a local file, like a SQLite database lock.
It's a growing pain of the agentic era. We're moving from a paradigm where humans interact with tools one at a time to a paradigm where multiple autonomous agents might be trying to orchestrate the same tools simultaneously. The plumbing hasn't quite caught up to the ambition yet.
It's definitely an issue to keep an eye on if you're building complex workflows with Claude Code. For now, the workaround seems to be strictly isolating your sessions, but hopefully we'll see a more robust concurrency model rolled out in a future update.
All right, that brings us to the roundup. Let's hit a few more stories real quick before we wrap up the show.
Let's do it.
First up, another one from the Claude Code Issue Tracker. There's a nasty bug where the Windows subsystem for Linux, case folding, produces silent fragmentation in the projects directory.
Right, because the system keys on the literal current working directory string without running realpath first. Differing capitalizations create entirely separate project profiles. The tricky part is that fixing the canonicalization requires a dedicated migration step. Otherwise, existing users are going to lose all their resume continuity when they update.
Also in Claude Code news, Windows users are reporting an issue where the GitHub connector in the co-work environment shows a green connected status, but exposes absolutely zero tools to Claude.
It's the classic UI lying to the user. The OAuth authorization succeeds on the back end, but the actual tool binding fails silently. It's incredibly frustrating when the dashboard says everything is perfectly fine, but the agent just shrugs at you when you ask it to open a pull request.
Moving away from bug trackers, over at the Vatican,
Pope Leo XIV has released a new encyclical titled Magnifica Humanitas, addressing the intersection of human dignity and artificial intelligence. It is a profound and timely read. It really pushes back on the modern tendency to treat human output as mere training data, arguing instead for a technological framework that elevates rather than replaces the human spirit. It's fascinating to see institutions that are millennia old grappling with cutting-edge tech.
Finally, there's a thoughtful post over on the Android Essence blog titled Leave Me Behind. It discusses the sheer exhaustion of trying to keep up with the relentless pace of tech hype cycles.
It's a sentiment I think a lot of working developers are feeling right now. Sometimes you just want to build with stable, boring technology and let the bleeding edge move on without you. It's a great reminder that not every project needs to be rewritten in Rust or powered by an LLM.
And I think that's a perfect note to end on. That is going to do it for this episode of the NaraCast Tech Briefing.
Thanks for listening, everyone. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to subscribe in your podcast player of choice and maybe leave us a review.
We'll be back later this week with more news, bugs, and deep dives from the bleeding edge of tech. Until then, stay curious.